The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to today's show. My name is Chris. I'm here with Jim as well as our fabulous intro person introduced us. Intro person. Is that what we'll refer to her as? You might want to turn on your microphone before you start speaking.
Wow. Normally you let me try talking, then you make fun of me and rip me apart, and then...
I could tell from the lack of sound from you touching your microphone that it wasn't on, so...
But normally
you can't tell until
normally,
you speak.
Okay, so you don't do it on purpose.
Sometimes I do.
Sometimes you do? Mm-hmm. Okay. I had my microphone off, listeners, because we had just wrapped up recording our Colorado version of the Retirement and IRA Show, which, by the way, will be at the end of today's podcast here on the Retirement and IRA Show iTunes edition. It is an interview we had with Barry James of James Investment Research. We like to bring him on once a month. We did not bring him on, Chris, in December. We were just too busy with the holidays, and so was Barry with vacations and travel and this and that. But he did come on and give us a little bit of information I think our do-it-yourselfer iTunians will find interesting, especially if you are a value investor. If you are more of a growth momentum style investor and think the good times are here to roll and everything's going to keep going up greatly in the equity markets, you probably won't really enjoy what Barry has to say.
Or maybe he'll convince you to reconsider your stance.
It's possible. Sometimes they're feisty folks, the value and the growth camps. Mm-hmm. They sometimes get a little feisty with each other, and you don't really see a value guy saying, all right, I'm going to be growth all of a sudden, or a growth guy all of a sudden says, hey, I'm going to be value. It's just what I've noticed. But who knows? Will be at the end of today's show. Today's show will run about an hour and 10 minutes in length.
At the most.
At the most, yes.
And or shorter.
Or shorter, yes.
Because I think you were trying to get out of here to beat the...
Well, that's when it was snowing rush. Like a banji. Today it's not. Oh, right now
like
it's
a
not.
Banji?
Snowing like a banshee. Oh, don't tell me I messed that up, too.
Yeah, it's a banshee.
A banshee?
Banshee.
It's banji. Not banji?
No, banji isn't. A banjo is a musical instrument.
I know what a banjo is. It's not snowing like a banji?
No, banshee.
What's a banshee?
Banshee is a mythical creature that is kind of scary and screams a lot.
So why do they say it's blanking like a banshee?
She.
Banshee?
Mm-hmm. Banshee.
B-A-N-S-H-E.
S-H-E-E. Yeah.
E-E. Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea where that saying came from?
Anything like a banshee is going to be loud and obnoxious, and it's a term that expresses large magnitude.
Wow. See what you learn on the show. See what I learn. And thank you for being very nice, explaining to me the way it's supposed to be said, not ridiculing me, not writing it down on the Jimism list.
Oh, I've got it up here. I'll add it later. You know, if Pete was here or Justin was here, we'd have a lot more fun with it. But since they're not here to laugh with me,
it just takes the fun away.
It takes some of the fun away. Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Oh, the other thing I want to mention before we get into this much farther, we're going to be able to add a star to the map, aren't we?
For what state?
You don't know? As I was repairing your computer or messing with your computer, I saw a question from a new state right there on your desk. Did you not?
Perhaps this one that I moved to the top of the list.
I hope. Well, if it's not, then we've got two.
Got two stars. We do have a new star, yes. And as promised, because this email just came in on January 12th, if they're from one of the states, we don't have a star, and there's not many states left. They jump to the top of the list.
Perfect.
Or, if they're a live caller, they even jump to the top of that list. Even if they're from a state we already have.
Okay.
But if there's a human on the other end of the phone, why don't we talk a little bit about that? Because this is the Retirement and IRA Show iTunes version.
Yeah.
So we are broadcasting live as we record this.
True. I wasn't going to mention how they call until someone wants to call.
Well, how do we know if someone wants to call?
Well, there has to be a listener.
We have no listeners.
Correct.
Zilch.
There'll be listeners later on the podcast, but the live bodies, there are none right now.
See, Chris and I thought it was a brilliant idea. Apparently, it wasn't as brilliant as we thought. But we thought broadcasting the recording of the show live.
It doesn't really change things much, so we can keep doing it.
Yeah, I mean, we're still getting tons of emails. Look at all these emails we got coming in. But it's just funner, more fun. When someone calls with a real question.
True. There's less hardware, though, if we don't have to do that part. So.
And interacts with us. I've spent money on all this hardware, so we're keeping it.
Not much.
Doesn't matter. We're not going to all of a sudden.
$30.
Hey, that's 30 bucks. You know how many Starbucks that would have been? Like six.
I thought they were free.
They are free. But if I had 30 bucks, I could have bought six more of them.
That's a weird logic. But go ahead.
No, it's not. But
so when a listener comes on. I can see them, and then I'll let them know personally. I'll reach out to them.
No, but what I'm doing is letting the 8,000 monthly listeners we have to this podcast know if they want to call us,
you can
they
say that.
Can't.
That's... Just don't give out the number.
Why not?
Because there's no one to call right now.
No, but they're listening.
They're not going to write it down.
If you are an iTunian listener listening to this and you would like to jump ahead of even this listener whose email we're about to answer because he's from a state Chris doesn't have, even if you're from a state Chris has a star on, we take any and all phone calls during this 1 hour, 1 hour and 10 minutes recording session for the Retirement and IRA Show. If you go to Jim Helps, that's JimHelps.com, JimHelps.com, right on the homepage, eighth of a way down to the left, there's a little link, and it says listen now or something like that.
Yeah.
And if you click that, you can listen to us record now and call us, and we'll answer your question live.
We now have a listener, so now we need to give out the phone number.
So if this one listener who logged on and is now listening, we got to get you before you hang up. And if you have a question, you can simply call the office at 970-530-0556. The lovely Laura will most likely be the one answering the phone, and she will take your information and somehow send your information and phone call into Chris, and he will somehow, don't ask me how, press a few buttons, and you'll be on the radio with
us. It's magic.
Okay.
But in the meantime, we were going to answer some email questions.
We are. Right. And as Chris let the bag the cat out of the bag... Is that right? Cat out of the bag?
You nailed
it.
I nailed it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So
was the cat in there with a banshee?
I thought it was banshee.
No, banshee.
Banshee.
Yeah. Sorry.
Crazy as a banshee.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought it was banshee.
No.
All right, but this email came in January 20th and jumped to the top of the list because he put in the subject.
It's only the 15th. It couldn't have come in the 20th.
I said the 12th, January
12th. You said the 20th.
I did not. I said the 12th.
I'll play it back for you after. Go ahead.
I didn't say the 20th. Anyways, he began his email with Montana, hallelujah, because it is a listener from Montana.
Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah.
And Chris is one state closer to filling the entire country.
Yes. So before we proceed with the question, let me give the quick short list of the states we still need. So if you're in one of these states, please
email us a question. You jump to the top of the list.
So we still need, staying out west, Nevada, Idaho, Nebraska. Those three out west. Everything else out west we've got covered. Then farther east, we still need Mississippi, Delaware.
I think that's it.
That seems like too few.
No, five, because we had six before. Six minus so one is five.
Delaware.
Mississippi.
Nebraska. Idaho. Nevada. Only five. We've gotten a question from every state in the union.
But five. And several countries in the world.
And a few of those, too.
And we still haven't figured what Chris is going to do after he fills the map, but one small step at a time. Let's fill the map first.
Nevada.
I think we'll fill it this year sometime.
I would hope. It's only January 12th. So.
True.
Well, 15th now. This question is from the 12th.
Friday the 12th. Okay. So it begins. Jim, Chris, Justin, and Peter. He's got everybody in there.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a question for you, though. I only glanced at it, but I think it's a Jim question.
Yeah, I can answer this. Okay. I just discovered your podcast and enjoy it up here in Big Sky Country. Do you have any idea how they got the name Big Sky?
Ever been there?
Well, it's wide open. It's just
horizon to horizon is huge.
Right.
Nothing, it's just big and blue and beautiful.
Okay. Just discovered your podcast and enjoy it up here in Big Sky Country. Have been listening to many past episodes. I'm not sure if you still need a star in Montana.
Not now.
Not now, but thanks to you. But there is no doubt or debate regarding my residency, because remember, there's been a few iffy ones.
Yeah, like you were driving through.
Drove through there
you
once.
You moved from there 20 years ago, but you call it home.
Yep. As I have been a Montanian for all of my 59 years.
Excellent.
I bet she has a horse, too.
They totally...
He's from Montana. Come on. You've been in Montana for 59 years. You got a horse.
I bet he's ridden a horse. I'd go that far, but I know a lot of people in Montana don't own a horse.
Really?
Yeah. There's towns and cities there. It's not all ranch folk.
All right. But I agree. He probably rides a horse better than me.
That's
almost guaranteed. A given. That is a given. I saw the hunting guide this weekend that I'm going to go hunting with in Montana.
Did he ask
not
you about
Montana,
your special
Wyoming.
Underwear?
No, that was a joke. There's that wearing silk does not...
It's a bit of a joke because you tried it.
I did try. You told me to get silk underwear.
I never did. I didn't do that. Someone did.
You played along with it. You and the blonde who used to be on the show here, Amy. She lulled me right into that. I went out. I didn't buy just silk. I bought a silk, that head-to-toe suit.
A onesie.
Mm-hmm. A silk onesie for men. That's hard to find.
With a little trap door in the back.
I put this silk thing on, and they told me that I would slide in that horse's saddle and wouldn't get hurt. That's bull. Let me tell you, I got hurt. But anyways, I bumped into that the guide because when I go hunting in Montana in a few more years, it's going to take me 8 years to get enough points to hunt bull elk in this area I want to go to. He keeps reminding me that I have to go in on horseback.
And bring your silk underwear.
I ain't bringing silk underwear, but he did promise me. I think the guy wants my business, but he promised me. He said, I'm going to get you a near-death pony. He says, don't worry about it. You'll get in there. And that's what I need. And I told him, I want my feet, if I take them out of the little stirrups, whatever you call those things, I want to be able to touch the ground and slow that thing down.
You're kidding.
A burrow is
fine
for me.
No, it's like having a big boat on the ocean. The bigger, the more smooth they are. Those little ones, they go boom, 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 walking.
No, all horses go boom, 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 boom,
boom. No, not the big one. You get a big one that has a nice long stride. It'll be like cruising on a cruise ship. That's what you want.
A big one.
Even if you need a ladder to get down off of it.
Eesh.
Yeah, big, big, gentle horse. That's what you want.
I don't want a little burro.
No, that's crazy. He's taking advantage of your city brain.
Well, that's still a few more years away. But in order to get a big elk, I got to go in on a horse. Okay, so he says, I find the podcast very informative. Enjoyed your wide range of topics. I also like the idea of you having your 101 educational series. Mm. part of those episodes seem to be referenced in one of your recent podcasts. And it's true. Mm-hmm. Remember, I mentioned I sprung it on you that we are in the process of trying to hire a new financial planner here. And once I can finally find someone who has the criteria we're looking for and can bring him or her on board, preferably a her, but if we can bring him or her on board, the first task they're going to have is to learn what all that electronic stuff in front of Chris does and how to run it. So if you're never around, mm-hmm. we can still record the podcast. And more importantly, we can come out with a second episode every week. I don't want to make you do it. You're more than welcome to do it if you want to, but I know you're very busy. But it's going to be more of an episode where I can delve deeper. We're going to take no calls, no emails answered. I'm just going to pick a topic and explain more on that particular topic. So I'm excited about that idea. Okay. I have a question. Mm-hmm. I am married, age 59, spouse is 53. I plan on retiring in 2 years at approximately 61 or 62, while my spouse will continue to work until she reaches 60. Both of us are covered by my spouse's health insurance plan, which includes a high deductible health policy mm-hmm. and is HSA eligible. And we just answered an HSA question last mm-hmm. week, I believe it was.
Yep.
HSA, for those iTunians who don't know, health savings account. Listen to some of our older shows. We talk about them. I have approximately $400,000 in my current employer's 401k, $310,000 in IRAs, and $130,000 in Roth IRAs. My question regards the period between 59 and a half and 65 when I become eligible for Medicare. If I take distributions from my IRA to fund an HSA up to the allowed limits for all those years, does it keep those dollars from ever being taxed? My logic is that dollars residing in a rollover account were pre-tax, and when I take distributions, I'll have to pay tax. But if I take distributions to fund my HSA contributions, those dollars will be tax deductible. Thanks in advance for your answer. And he actually signs it because we always call everybody this to protect their
privacy.
Anonymity. He calls himself George in Montana.
Just what I always wanted, my own little bunny rabbit. I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
I'm not a bunny rabbit.
So I have forgotten this fun fact about HSAs, so that's why I said this is more of a you question. What he's basically asking is, can he roll over money from his traditional IRA into the HSA and consider it a contribution into the HSA and not exposing it to taxes in that transaction, whether it's a direct rollover, which would be the most efficient way if it's allowed, or if he takes a distribution from the IRA and then puts it in, which he's not going to want to do since he's under the age of 59 and a half. But I have to admit that off the top of my head, I can't remember if you can use traditional IRA money as contribution into the HSA via a rollover. Is that allowed? Because that's kind of the crux of the question here.
That is his crux. And he is semi-right, and so are you. Yes, you can do it, but not quite the way he thinks it can be done. Mm-hmm. So the government does allow you to take money from a traditional or Roth IRA. And I don't recommend doing it with a Roth IRA
no.
because your Roth IRA is already growing tax-free if you use it for or take the withdrawal from your Roth IRA in a qualified manner. And a qualified withdrawal from an IRA, a Roth IRA, is simple. Your Roth must be open for at least 5 years, or you must have been contributing to any Roth for at least 5 years. So you have a five-year-old time period that you were in the Roth program, and then you take money out of the Roth after the age of 59 and a half, or after you die. Well, you wouldn't do it, but your beneficiaries would. After you become disabled, or to buy a first-time home purchase. That's called a qualified withdrawal. If you satisfy both of those, the Roth is at least 5 years old And one of those other four reasons I listed, money can come out of the Roth already tax-free, Chris. And of course, your contributions can come out of the Roth at any time for any reason and also be 100% tax-free. So I don't really want to move money from the Roth once I get it in.
Right.
But a traditional IRA has a lot of taxes built into it. And if you take money out of a traditional IRA, you will normally have to pay taxes on it. So the thought that he had is, hey, what if I took the amount of money that I am allowed to contribute every year? And he wants to do it for some reason. He wants to do it between 59 and a half and age 65 when he's eligible for Medicare. He has that part right, Chris, because once he enrolls in Medicare, he can no longer put money into an HSA. So he has that right. But there is no reason to wait to do the rollover from an IRA to a
HSA.
An HSA. He says he has $310,000 in an IRA. He can roll money from that IRA to another IRA or convert it to a Roth IRA or move it to an HSA at any age, not just 59 and a half.
Right, but aren't there limits?
Well, that's what I'm getting to.
Yeah.
So actually, he's already 59, so I guess it doesn't take much longer to wait to 59 and a half. But there are limits, and that's where his thought of doing this every year between 59 and a half and 65 isn't going to work. Because the government is on to this. This would be a good thing, especially if they, if it was unlimited. Right now, they limit the rollover to no more than that year's contribution limit.
Right.
So if you're rolling it over for 2018, it would be 2018's contribution limit.
And that's why I think he wants to do it over multiple years.
But you can't.
Oh.
You can only do it once. They only offer one. Yeah, see? They only offer
one
rollover. Lifetime rollover.
Got it.
So you can't do this every year. But for one time and one time only, you can roll over that year's contribution to the HSA. Only if you didn't make a contribution to the HSA. They equal out. So let's just say he was allowed to put in $3,100. I'm just making that. Well, he's married, so it would be more than that. Let's just say he was allowed to put in $6,000. I'm just making that up. But he already put in $3,000 on his own. He could roll over another $3,000 from his IRA.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't put in $6,000 and roll over $6,000.
But answer me this. I'm standing in his shoes trying to interact with you, I think.
Okay.
The natural questions that would come up with this. So the only reason you'd want to do the rollover in this way is if you're under 59 and a half. Because once he reaches 59 and a half, he can get at that traditional IRA without the 10% penalty.
But money coming from an HSA covering a qualified medical expense is 100% tax-free.
I understand, but you're not picking up on my question. My question is, in these future years, he's going to work till, say, 62. He said 61 or 62. Mm-hmm. But once he gets to 59 and a half, it sounds to me like he doesn't have the disposable income to fund the HSA. He's wanting to take some of the money from the IRA. Couldn't he take a distribution from the IRA,
which is subject to deductibility,
taxes, and then deduct the contribution to the HSA, effectively
Absolutely.
Getting the, you know, $6,000.
It would wash it out. It would be an equal wash.
Right. It won't wash, though, below 59 and a half.
Because he has the 10%
right.
penalty.
So this year, when he's 50, you know, before he's 59 and a half, he could do the rollover, exhaust his one time. And then in any subsequent years, if he would like to, he could continue contributing via
the IRA distribution.
The distribution and then
absolutely. Because what Chris is getting at, and it would be a wash, listener, if you're tight on money and you can't fully contribute to your HSA, once you're over the age of 59 and a half, the 10% early withdrawal penalty from your traditional IRA goes away. So again, let's just say you're looking to get $6,000 in your HSA account. You can take the $6,000 from your IRA and you'll have to pay taxes on it. And it would push him theoretically maybe closer to a higher bracket. So we'd have to crunch the numbers. But But let me scratch that. He's going to get an equal deduction because the money going into his HSA is deductible.
Yep.
So he would take $6,000 out, have to declare it on one part of his 1040 as income, but on another part of his 1040, he gets a deduction equal to it. So it would be kind of a wash. So it would be a good way if he used up his quote-unquote one lifetime rollover, that he can do it now as a withdrawal. A couple caveats, though, with these rollovers to bear in mind. The rollover has to be done in the tax year you want the contribution. You can make a contribution to your HSA up till tax filing deadline,
right,
not the rollover.
Which this would be, so if he wants to make a 2017 contribution.
He'd have to make it as a contribution, not a rollover.
He could do it, right, but he could do it up till April 16th of 2018 because
the 15th is a
Sunday.
This year, yep.
But he could not do the rollover and make it effective. If he did the rollover, it would count as a 2018.
The rollover counts. Mm-hmm. And then you have to maintain your HSA health account. The health plan, the actual
high deductible
mm-hmm. policy for 1 year after the rollover, or it won't count. So you can't close your high deductible policy the day after you do the rollover. They're on to that trick as well.
So
you have to maintain that. Now, who's checking on all this? Lord only knows. They'll pick up on a lot of this if you're ever audited. But if you want to play by the rules, those are the rules. So his thought works. I like his train of thought. The unfortunate thing is you're only limited to one IRA rollover. But it would be nice to do, especially to our listeners, our iTunians, who are under the age of 59 and a half. So you don't have the ability. Again, once you're over 59 and a half, Chris's idea worked perfectly. Take the money from the IRA as a direct distribution, no 10% penalty. Put it right into your HSA account as a contribution. The two will equal out on your 1040 and no harm, no foul. But for those younger than that, to do it as a rollover is good in the sense you're taking money that would have been taxable and avoiding the taxes
and
on that.
It never taxable as long as it's used for a qualified distribution for
medical expenses. Correct. But don't put it in your HSA and then take it out for a non-healthcare reason, because then you're going to pay a 20% penalty tax,
right,
not to age 59 and a half, but to age 65.
Yep.
So it goes a little bit longer on that. So make sure you want to use it for healthcare. But I like his train of thought.
And I could see
it just isn't going
to
work.
For people trying to feed their HSA, maybe trying to catch up a little bit, dump some money that they maybe couldn't otherwise afford from their current cash flow situation, but they have some IRA money in there, that rollover at least gets you 1 year's worth of contribution stuffed in there.
But I like that your thought after 59 and a half. Now, you're not going to have much time. You're essentially between 60 and 65 for 5 years, especially if you stopped working, but you still have this high deductible plan, but you don't have the cash flow anymore to fund the HSA. Take it as a distribution, take a corresponding deduction, and I think you'll come out okay. You'll get that money in.
So, because there's no requirement that he still has a job to contribute to the HSA, right? That is not a
job. Is not having the high deductible plan is. It's not like an IRA,
right,
where you need earned income. Correct. Earned income has no bearing on the HSA contribution. Yep. Having a high deductible HSA eligible healthcare plan, not just a high deductible plan, has to be HSA eligible. The provider of that plan, the insurance company, will tell you, usually right in the name of the plan. But if you have any doubts, call them and say, hey, does my plan qualify for me to contribute to an HSA?
Perfect. So we're actually up to quite a few listeners now.
Three? Four.
Four.
Wow.
Yeah. So
any of them want to call?
That's why I'm bringing it up. So any of those who are currently listening live, well, it's about 4 o'clock Mountain Time on January 15th as we're recording this live, you are welcome to call. The phone lines are open, if you will, at 970-530-0556. That's 970-530-0556. And we will be happy to answer any questions that you might have. We still do have a pile of emails that we'll get to in the meantime, but we will interrupt any of those for a live caller if you'd like to call.
Perfect. Okay, next email comes in from, it's close to the state you need, but no cigar.
Close, but no cigar.
Mm-hmm. Maryland.
Maryland. Ah, we're getting close.
We have Maryland.
We need that Delaware. Need I don't know why Delaware.
I thought we had a Delawarean write to us in the past.
No, there was one that they'd driven through Delaware at some point, and we were trying to count that, and we decided that wasn't quite enough.
Because they drove through it?
Right.
All right. Okay, this begins. Marylander here.
Have I seen this one, or is this fresh for me?
I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Okay, go ahead.
Have you been playing with my computer and looking through my emails?
No, I have not. The first, but not the second.
Have you looked on this desk where I print them and throw them and then lose them?
I have
find
not.
Find them months later.
No.
Okay.
So listeners just know, I'm hearing this for the first
this
time.
This is news
as you are.
To you as well.
Yeah.
Marylander here with a QCD question that I'd appreciate your opinion on.
Qualified.
Charitable.
Distribution. Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know, a QCD stands, just as Chris said, Qualified Charitable Distribution. They are only available to people over the age of 70 and a half already. This Marylander never told me his age. So the first thing I want to begin with, Mr. Marylander, if you are under 70 and a half,
forget it.
Ain't going to work. In order to do a qualified charitable distribution, that's when you take money from an IRA, not a 401k, folks, not a 457, not a TSP, has to be IRA. When you take money from an IRA and send it directly to a charity, you don't touch the money, it doesn't go into your account, and then you write the check from your checking account, nothing like that. When the money comes directly from the IRA, directly to a charity, and you have to be over the age of 70 and a half when you do that. Not in the year you turn 70 and a half, but over the age of 70 and a half. I was born July 24th, so I can do mine after January 24th of whatever year it is that I turn 70 and a half.
Next year.
No, it's not that bad, thankfully. But just wanted to throw those little bits out. So what's so great about a QCD, listeners, for those people who don't know, the money passes 100% tax-free. So if you don't itemize, and most people now they're saying only 15% of tax filers will actually itemize, you'd still be able to benefit from being charitably inclined because your money comes out of the IRA 100% tax-free. You never have to declare it as income. So another good benefit of a QCD is it doesn't increase your marginal brackets and perhaps gets your income to a level that starts to abolish some of your deductions and things of that nature, or could subject your Medicare premiums to surcharges and things like that. Because you never declare a QCD as income at all, it can keep you under those limits. And if you don't itemize, as I would wager most retirees who did it right don't, you don't have a mortgage, you don't have huge mortgage interest deductions, they are really cutting down on the ability to deduct state and local taxes now. We talked about that a few weeks ago. So most people aren't going to itemize, Chris, and they wouldn't benefit from donating money. It's not like, oh, I'll take the money out of my IRA, pay taxes on it, and then donate some to a charity and then deduct it. That isn't quite a dollar-for-dollar wash as the HSA strategy we were talking about because of the way the deductibility works and that most people aren't going to be itemizing anyway, so they're not going to benefit from it. So QCDs are beautiful for that, but there's some rules that must be followed. So he continues to write, I know the QCD rules are clearly met if the check is payable directly from a traditional IRA to a qualified charity and the check is issued by the custodian itself. The custodian, folks, is the company holding your IRA. But is it also an option if there is check writing on an IRA for the owner of the IRA to write the check themselves and send the check to a charity from that account? It seems to me the money distribution would still be going directly from the IRA to the charity without ever passing through the owner's hands. Mm-hmm. Thank you and happy new tax year. And then he signed it his real name, but obviously we're going to call him George. George, yes, it works that way because we do it all the time in this office. We set up QCD check writing. I call it QCD check writing for pretty much every client who uses this one custodian we use. Name is Pershing. I'm not giving any kudos out to them or saying, hey, you got to use them. Pershing is one of the few custodians that offer IRA check writing. Not every custodian offers check writing. But you would have to find out from your IRA provider, do you offer check writing on your IRA? Now, a couple of caveats. When you write checks from your IRA, none of the money goes to the IRS as tax withholding. So if you're writing the check for a QCD, that's okay because the money's going to come out tax-free. Mm-hmm. But if you're writing the check to yourself or like, oh, gee, we owe $5,000 deposit for our cruise next month. I'll write it from my IRA checking account. The custodian is not going to send tax withholding to the IRS for that distribution. You would have to file quarterly taxes and do that on your own. Make sure you don't get to a point where you take out a lot of money with check writing and never sent any money to the IRS. They frown on that. But if you're only using the check writing for QCDs, don't worry about that. Because a QCD up to $100,000 per taxpayer, not per IRA, but per all IRAs combined, so up to $200,000 for a married couple can come out every year directly from an IRA and go to charity tax-free. So yes, we do it all the time with check writing. Do not write the check out to yourself. You write the check directly to charity and send it in. I also recommend, and I'm going to start really pushing this on people who do this with us, our clients, Chris, you should also include a letter with that. I tell my clients to do it that way, but I'm not really there seeing if they're actually sending this letter. But you should send a letter to the charity as well telling them that this check is coming directly from your IRA. It's payable directly from the IRA custodian to them as a QCD. And you do not want anything of value given back in return. And you would like them to send you a receipt and make sure your address is in there. And you want them to send a receipt that they received this check as a QCD. Nothing of value was paid to you for sending this check, and the receipt should have the date that it applied. If you're ever audited, you need that receipt from the charity. Only if you're audited. You don't have to attach it to your tax return or anything. But if you're ever audited and they want proof that this money was given, you need that receipt. Mm-hmm. And nothing of value, folks, can ever be received on a QCD donation. Nothing. Not even a little sticker for your car I gave to my church today. Or a little fish sticker if you're giving to the church. Those little fish things.
So not that DVD of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra?
No, nothing, nothing, nothing of value. You can receive nothing. It's kind of like I'm watching reruns of Seinfeld and they're up to the point where they're trying to sell the show to NBC. And NBC asks him, what's it about? And George says, nothing.
Right.
And NBC is saying, well, it's got to be about something. Nothing. So just borrow that from Seinfeld, folks. Nothing. It is a show about nothing. And this QCD, you can receive nothing of value. If you receive anything of value, the entire QCD is taxable, and it defeats the purpose of doing the QCD. But yes, check writing from your IRA works great. If your current custodian, if you're over the age of 70 and a half, and you want to do it this way, it's a hell of a lot easier if you can write the checks yourself, sign them, send them in with your standard cover letter, and keep copies of this. Keep a copy of the check and a copy of the cover letter. And it's a lot easier, Chris, if you're doing this yourself, just writing the check.
Right. And why don't you remind people how this affects their RMD for the year if they send money to a charity via a QCD?
Do you want to tell them that? Or do you want me to?
No, I'm the prompter.
You're the prompter.
You just didn't get to that part. And I think a lot of people
I think that would be a good thing because Chris is on to something here. The first money out of your IRA after the age of 70 and a half is always the RMD. So one of the rules of a QCD is it can reduce your required minimum distribution or eliminate it totally. Let's just say your required minimum distribution is $15,000. If the first money out of your IRA is that check for $15,000 written to your church or any other qualified charity, it cannot go to a donor-advised fund. See, now we're starting to go down rabbit holes. It cannot go to a donor-advised fund or a family foundation. So you can't open a donor-advised fund, which is a charitable foundation you set up yourself with a custodian, control yourself, get the deduction today or the charitable contribution today, but actually make the actual gift to charities later. You cannot fund a donor-advised fund or a family foundation with a QCD. Money has to go to the charity and it's gone. You have no control over it. So if the $15,000, in my example, let's say you had a $15,000 RMD, you did a QCD first before any money came out, you can put or at least assign the entire QCD to your entire RMD. Mm-hmm. The RMD comes out first. And you can say to the government, look, I had a $15,000 RMD and I made a $15,000 QCD on January 15th. I have no RMD for the rest of the year. And that is true. Now, if you want to take money out of your IRA, you can, or you don't have to. For those listeners who tithe on an annual basis or even a weekly basis, every time you go to church with that little collection basket, you can put a check in. Or just tell the pastor or the priest that, hey, I'm going to only give one check this year instead of a check or a dollar or $50, whatever it is, every week. Let me just give one check every year and call it a QCD. So you could do it that way. But yes, you can use the QCD to reduce your RMD, but the first dollars right. is the RMD. So back to my example.
So it counts as a distribution, bottom line.
Yeah.
Even though you aren't getting it and you aren't paying taxes on it, it still counts as a distribution for that year and thus would count as an RMD if you still are needing to make RMDs at the point of you writing the check.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Fun fact. Well, not fun. Interesting fact.
Interesting.
Valuable fact.
Okay. Well, hopefully this Marilinda, that answered his question.
Perfect.
Now,
so before we go to the next one, let me remind our current live listeners. We are live right now. It's about 4:12 p.m. on Mountain Time on January 15th. If you're listening now, feel free to give us a call. If you have a question, the number is 970-530-0556. Again, that's 970-530-0556. 0556.
Excellent. And don't forget, iTunian listeners, you can call us during the recording of the mm-hmm. show, as we're trying to do now. You can email us questions. The Retirement and IRA show is going to continue. We're going to continue to answer listeners' questions either via email or direct phone calls. And hopefully sometime soon, I don't know how much further into the future it'll be, but sometime this year we'll be rolling out the second version of the Retirement and IRA show. We call it the Retirement and IRA Show Education, and that show won't take any calls or emails. It's going to be a time where myself and Chris, if he wants to come on it, and Justin and Peter and anyone else I can pull together, we're going to take retirement topics, Chris, and really drill down into them. I can get more into the nuances of IRAs, required minimum distribution rules, QCDs, HSAs, Social Security, whatever the case may be. We're going to drill down into certain topics and teach people that.
QLACs?
QLACs, yes. I like QLACs. I know you don't, but I like QLACs. Well, you like QLACs. You just don't like doing shows on them. But
you know, it's been long enough since we've done one. We could probably do one.
We did three QLAC shows in a row. Six hours on QLACs. That's pretty damn good.
Too much QLAC.
Maybe to you. But I also want to remind our iTunian listeners, we work with people throughout the country. Just because we're based in Colorado, if you need some sound financial planning or retirement planning, really, because that's our area of specialty, we are distribution planners here. We are retirement planners, distribution planners. If you ever have any questions or if you're just wondering, geez, I kind of handle managing my own assets. I'm not looking for some advisor to want to take over my assets and start charging me to manage, but I wish there was somebody I could talk to, get some advice on my retirement planning. One thing you can probably tell with our show, there's a hell of a lot more to know about retirement planning than asset management. That's actually the easy part. Managing your assets, that's nothing, especially as you're getting older and you're just low-cost, passive, Vanguard investments with good asset allocation, keep the prices low. That to me is fine. I often say to people, the single easiest way for you to increase your return without increasing your risk is to lower the fees you're paying. So we see eye to eye on all that. But it's how do you tie everything else in together, Chris? How do you start looking at tax planning opportunities, tax preparation opportunities, Social Security, Medicare? How about what RMDs are going to do at age 70 and a half? What about the widow-widower tax penalty at the death of the first spouse or the death of the second spouse, especially if you are in a blended family situation? How do you make sure your assets go to you and the other spouse's assets go to their children and not lost? I mean, there's so many other things that we have to look at. And it's not just investment management, Chris. It's what we call a retirement allocation. It's positioning your money not for accumulation planning, but distribution planning. You cannot enter retirement using the same investment rules that carried you to that point. And I often use the analogy of hiking because here in Colorado, we do a lot of hiking and I like to hike. And you use one strategy for going up the mountain. You use another strategy for going down the mountain. And most people who are hiking or mountain climbing are hurt, Chris, not on the way up, on the way down. And retirement is the same way. Saving for retirement is easy.
You just have to do it.
You just got to do it. Right. Spending in retirement, that's where it's hard. Distribution planning. But that's what we specialize in. So if you think we can help you and you just want to pay us for our time and advice, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. You can come to our website, Jim Helps. That's Jim, HELPS.com. There's a little calendar somewhere on the homepage. You can't miss it. You can schedule what we call a coffee and a second opinion, and we'll just chat on the phone, see if there's a way we can help you and work with you, and we'll tell you how much it would cost. Or you can call the office directly. The phone number is on there, and speak to Laura. She will be glad to help you.
Okay. So, next email question.
Next email. How much time do we have left?
Probably, let's do one more.
Okay.
One more that's not too long.
Okay. Trying to see where this guy's from.
America.
Somewhere. We can call him Delaware if you want.
That'd be cheating a little bit. I want a legitimate Delaware, legitimate Nevada.
He does not indicate. I can ask him because I usually email. So I'll email him and say, hey, we're going to answer your email question, but where are you from?
Perfect.
Okay. He begins, I have been listening to your show since the top of the hour comedy break. This is a long time listener.
Yeah.
This is a fan.
That's a long stretch.
Yes. I've been listening to your show since the top of the hour comedy break. For our newer listeners, or pretty much anyone who just started listening over the last 5 years, I used to have a phenomenal segment on the show that I truly, truly enjoyed. I took very, very seriously. I took
it seriously.
I took classes on how to deliver a comedic line.
That's a little sad.
Tried to prep for it. But years ago, we had a woman co-host on the show named Devin. And Devin used to be a DJ for the radio station 1310 KFKA. Now we're totally internet-based, but this is going back years when we just used to rebroadcast a Colorado radio show. And I thought it would be a cool thing that once a week, because it was a two-hour show, in between hour one and hour two, we would lead in with a little comedy break with one of us. We take turns every week doing a little stand-up comedic routine for a minute.
It wasn't a routine.
So.
It was just a joke.
Tell a joke.
One joke.
A couple of jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Mine were much better than yours. Devin and Chris, unbeknownst to me, started this plot behind my back that they didn't want to do it. And rather being men about it and coming up to me and saying to my face, they instead decided to throw the whole segment. Throw the bit, and they would come up with the stupidest jokes.
We were keeping them family friendly.
The stupidest jokes I've ever heard.
It seems judgmental.
And
everyone's humor is different.
No flair in their delivery. They talk in like monotone, boring voices and try to crack a joke. So finally, I had to pull it because they refused to play along. Here's a fan going all the way back
to
that.
He didn't say he liked it. He just said he's been listening since then.
No, no. You read between the lines. Oh, he was saying, bring it back, bring it back, bring it back. Okay. That's what he's really
saying.
Well,
when you ask him what state he's from, you can ask him if he needs the top of the hour comedy break back.
Yeah. It might improve our listenership.
I think it'll be no.
Really? Okay, so he begins. My parents recently retired, and I sent them to listen to you because I know your advice can help. My questions are, I plan on retiring in 25 years at age 55. So he's a youngin. He's only 30.
So he's been listening since age 25? My goodness. Wow.
Yeah, because right now he's 30.
He's planning ahead.
Yeah, so he's been listening since 25.
Okay.
What is the plan for your business? I'm guessing you're going to be retired by then. I trust you guys. Would prefer to go on with you if I was working with an advisor. But what do I do as I get closer to retirement? That's a very good question. I'm asked that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad he asked that.
You're starting to look a little rough around the edges, a little aged. So people are wondering what's going to happen when you're gone.
True. Gone? I'm not going anywhere.
Well, gone from being here all the time.
True. That's a very good question. It's a very good question.
Yeah.
Okay, and I often bring that up when people meet with me. I often say to them, now that I've talked to you about your retirement, let me tell you about mine. And I freely address his concern. And it shouldn't just be with me. Anyone who's thinking of hiring a financial planner or a retirement planner or an investment advisor needs to find this out. Okay, so that's the thing. My other question, how do I know if I have too much in savings? I want to have plenty of money for retirement, but not so much that I have nothing to live on now. Mm. Two pretty good questions,
yeah.
I think. Mm-hmm. So let's address his first question first, and that is, what am I going to be doing personally? Well, I want to take this not necessarily from what I'm going to do personally, listener, because you're not working with us, so you need to be asking, and our other iTunians, whenever you hire a planner, even if they work for a large national firm. Now, they're going to say to you, oh, I work for a large national firm. So if anything ever happens to me, there's plenty of people in this office who will help you. Sure, I'll give you a little secret about the industry. You know who gets, those are called orphaned accounts. So if your advisor retired, died, as Chris was alluding to, because you said I was gone. You didn't say retired.
You're a little sensitive.
We didn't say retired. You said gone. We all know what that means. That's a euphemism for getting hit by a bus. So here's how the industry works on these large national firms. If you think for a minute people are sitting around saying, let's look at Joe Schmo's client list who just retired or just died. Let's look at his or her client list. Look through each client, figure out what their particular needs are, and then let's match them to the best advisor in this office or another office. They don't do it.
That would be very thoughtful.
You would think that's how they do it. They don't do it that way.
No.
They usually use those orphaned accounts to give rewards. Who has the most sales this month? Who's had the best help? Or who's new
and needs help? Yep.
And can start calling these people because they have time and get them in and try to sell them more. So you could actually end up with someone brand spanking new who doesn't know diddly squat. Or you're assigned to someone who just happened to have a lot of sales that particular month and they're being rewarded. And you're viewed more as someone to be able to sell more things to than someone who actually needs help. That's the ugly little truth of my industry. So that's if you work for a big national firm. A lot of times that's how it happens. So if you're asking that listener's question to someone who works for a big national firm, he or she, though, is going to say, oh, a big national firm is going to look through my client list if anything ever happened to me and assign to you an advisor who is best suited for your needs. Okay, that's BS. I already told you what they're going to do. Now, if you're working with a smaller advisor, such as myself, a self-employed, it's my business advisor, he or she hopefully is going to tell you, I have a succession plan in place. That's what the industry calls it. And some advisors will put them together differently. Some have them, Chris, a succession plan is nothing more than an agreement with other advisors who are self-employed as well, who they know and trust, to say, hey, you promised to come take care of my clients if something happens to me. I promise to come take care of your clients. Then they'll probably put it in a wrapper of what is called a buy-sell agreement. They'll probably get life insurance policies on each other, have their businesses pay for it. So all of a sudden there's cash in their business where they can use the cash to pay off the estate of the deceased business owner. So the deceased business owner's estate, read that as children and spouses, are being compensated fairly for the client list. And then the business relinquishes and the estate relinquishes to that advisor all the contact information and employees, and they start taking over that way. So that's one way advisors may do it. They may say, hey, I don't have anybody right here to help, but I have this particular agreement. Or others will design it the way I have. I have the staff on hand. There is Chris. Now, Chris is very busy. He's got 6 kids, a wife, a full-time job. Justin isn't quite as busy. He only has 3 kids and a wife and a full-time job. So Justin knows that he's to step in and start handling all the clients. Now, of course, he would probably tell Chris, hey, we need some more help. Chris, do you have time to work here a little bit extra until we can get Jim buried and finished crying and mourning for our loss.
Yeah, we need at least a week to get things situated.
But it'd be more than a week.
No, a week's plenty.
No.
They say you shouldn't dwell on those things.
I don't think either one of you would be able to function for months, if not years, after my untimely demise.
I don't know. I can dig a hole pretty quick.
All right, hey, you kick. I'll fill in. But what I particularly have is an agreement that Justin will step in and start taking over. This agreement is actually being formalized legally by Pete. Pete's putting the legal documents in place. And my intent, I don't intend to pass away tomorrow, but nobody really does. But my intent with my particular practice is I am not creating what is called a book. I am creating what is called a business. And find out from your advisor listeners how they view you. Now, again, the big national firms, I already told you how they do it. They're going to lie to you, tell you that they're actually going to spend some time researching, but they're instead going to award it to either somebody brand new or somebody who's past sales goals or whatever. But on the smaller firm, you got to find out for them, how did you come up with this person? What are you doing? How did you agree that this person would be a good fit? Well, when you're doing it for 18 years like I have been doing, I can tell you there's some people in the local area who I would trust my clients to work with. I'm saying, let's say I didn't have you and Justin. Mm-hmm. There's some that I trust and there's some I wouldn't send a client to for all the money in the world. I just don't trust them. So that's one way of doing it. But my particular way, and that, let me back up. That is what we call a book. So the industry calls all the clients every advisor has. The financial planning industry, Chris, I don't know how they came up with this. They call it a book. And it's all based years ago when it used, not years ago, it's even now, assets under management. How much assets do you have? And they're going to look at the value of all your clients. And the theory is if I can get all these clients over, and let's just say there's $100 million that all these clients have, and I'm charging 1% to manage, I'm going to start making another $1 million of income coming in. That's if you have a book. And your book gets sold to the highest bidder. I have a business. And the best analogy I give, Chris, when Charles Schwab dies, Schwab's not going out of business. There's people who will mourn, probably more than a week, that you say you will mourn. Well,
probably for Chuck, yeah.
Oh, Chuck, I mean, there's people there who are going to be mourning all year. Flags will fly at half staff at Charles Schwab buildings for decades, unlike here, where the flagpole will probably come down. But what I try to get my listeners to understand, I'm growing a business. No different than Charles Schwab, except his is about 1,000 times bigger than mine. But when I pass away, business continues. I've tried to instill in Chris and in Justin and everybody who comes and works for us, or every professional that we form an agreement with, what our morals are, what our values are, how we price our work, how we place the client first, how I try to instill all that in everybody, so hopefully that will continue. And then if something ever happened to me or other advisors you're interviewing, hopefully they're explaining the same thing. If they, and ask them, are you having, do you grow a business or a book? Will I be sold at your passing or retirement to whoever is making the highest bid to you or your estate? Or do you have an agreement in place ahead of time? If there's agreement in place ahead of time, how did you choose that person? Can I start researching that person? I mean, these are all things that people should say. Now, if the advisor tells you, I have a business and the business is going to continue, in my particular case, my estate will not give up complete. I'm not giving up complete ownership of this business while I'm alive. That I can tell you right now. Whoever buys this, whether it's Justin or Chris or someone else, that business, I'm not giving it all up. I'm going to retain probably around 40% ownership, because the dividends I can draw from that ownership will help fund my retirement. I didn't spend 25 years growing a business just to sell it all. But I'll sell about 60%, retain ownership of another 40. And if I pass away, it goes into a trust. And the remaining people who are running the business have to buy that business from the trust. And then when the assets go into a trust, just so y'all know what happens to it, it actually goes into a donor advised fund if I don't have a wife. Now, seeing as I've gone 54 years without a wife, chances are I may not have a wife.
You never know.
But if I do have a wife, she gets the assets. But if I don't have a wife, it goes into a donor advised fund, and employees of the business will be allowed to donate up to 5% of that fund's value every year to a charity of their choosing in the name of Jim Solnier and Associates. So that's just kind of how I put my continuation plan in place. But that's a very good question, and you need to ask your advisor, do you have a book that's going to be sold? And if so, have you chosen that person? Or do you have a business that's going to continue? And I have strived, even when I first started working with you, Chris, to always say, this is a business. It might be small. It might just be me right now. And now there's, what, 5 or 6 of us. And by time I retire, there could be 10 or 12 of us. But it is a business I have grown. And it is a business that specializes in retirement planning at fair prices for middle America, charging just for our time. And being honest with people and actually knowing what we're talking about. It's those values that I'm trying to instill as it continues on. So I like that question. When he asked it, I thought, this is a very good question. What are your thoughts on any of that?
No, I totally agree. When you're interviewing someone, and I see this a lot as well with maybe some parents were with an advisor or financial planner for many years. They pass away, and then the kids now have those assets, and they know there's this relationship with this financial planner. Well, this financial planner might be close to the age of their parents, if not older. So you need to know, as a younger person in particular, who's probably going to be around a lot longer than their advisor or planner, what is going to happen. You don't want to just... I can't tell you how many times it's just suddenly a surprise. You get a letter, especially with the big firms, you know, so-and-so has gone, you can't service your
account
anymore.
Died or retired, and they haven't told you.
And you have been assigned to this person you've never heard of before.
Yep.
And maybe it's a great fit, but you know, that'd be just luck of the draw. It's better to understand exactly what's going to happen, particularly with an older advisor, say 54 or older.
Oh, really? 54 or older?
I just pulled that out of the air.
Thin air. Just random, hypothetically.
About 54 or so.
Yeah. So what time is it? Okay, we got to get going soon. I got a date tonight, so I don't want to be late.
What?
Yeah, finally.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, we have a few minutes to discuss that then.
No, we got his second part of his question.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Saved. So then he writes, how do I know if I have too much in savings? I want to have plenty of money for retirement, but not so much that I have nothing to live on now. There is no way to say when you have too much or too little, honestly, listener, because there's so many moving parts here. So the best thing I can tell you is a rule of thumb. You're going to try to retire at 55. That is what we call an early retirement. Mm-hmm. That's at least 10 to 15 years early. Every 10 years adds about 2 years of life expectancy. Is it 2 years or 1 year? Every decade adds either 1 or 2 years of life expectancy to our ages. So he's only about 30, we're guessing. So by time he gets to 80, it could be another 5 or 10 years of life expectancy already added on to the male life expectancy, which is 85 already. So it could be 90, 95, and that's just the average. Some people are going to live longer, some are going to die sooner. So he is hoping that by age 55, he has amassed enough money to survive another 40 years maybe, if not more. I can't answer, how do you know when you have too much? But what I can say is if you're saving less than 15% a year, you're probably not going to have enough. You could save 10% a year if you were going to work to 65 or 70, but you're not. You're hoping to retire at 55. So if you're going to, and if retirement for you is a hard retirement where you're not going to do any work, then you better be saving 15 or more, not even counting your employer match, and just get it in there. Because retirement planning, listener, and I know you're young, you're only 30. It's nothing more than a seesaw ride. It truly is. It's a give and take. The younger you, the 30-year-old you, is sitting on the left side of the seesaw, and the 80-year-old you or the 90-year-old you is on the right side of the seesaw. And you guys are going up and down. And anything you do to benefit the younger you that makes the younger you go up, what's happening to the older you, Chris?
Going down.
It's going down. Mm-hmm. Anything you do to help the older you, give the older you some more money, is going to do what? Hurt the younger you. Mm-hmm. The idea is to get those two to balance. So you're going to have to give a little and take a little. I often tell clients or prospects who I'm counseling with, I may be talking to the 30, 50, 60-year-old you, but I'm advocating for the 70, 80, 90-year-old you. So I'm going to talk to you about what you need to do to benefit the older you and the younger you. There is no way for me to tell you if you have too much money saved. Only you're going to be able to truly determine that. But if you're saving less than 15, 20% of your money, I don't think you're saving enough. What are your thoughts?
I agree. That's kind of a yearly benchmark. The other thing you can look at is how much might you need to have amassed at 55 in order to continue a similar lifestyle. And I'd say with an early retirement like age 55, it's likely, and this is just kind of a rough rule of thumb in my mind, you're going to have at least 15 times your income in order to consider retiring and maintaining a similar lifespan or a lifestyle, if not more. So 15 to 20 times. So if you want to have a target amount you're trying to save up, you could do some projections. You'd have to make some assumptions as to what kind of return you're going to use, which, of course, is always kind of a guessing game. But at least you could see where you are towards this goal that you have if your intent is actually to retire, a hard retirement, at 55. If you're going to work part-time, then that relaxes some of those things. But I can't imagine being comfortable retiring on less than assets amassed of at least 15 times your pre-retirement income. But that's, again, just kind of a rule of thumb and depends a lot on factors that we need to discuss.
And the thing I wanted to throw out there, notice I didn't say, oh, you need to run a retirement plan so we can figure this out. Yeah. I didn't because you're only 30. and you're going to retire at 55, that's 25 years from now. And then you're going to live another 30 or 40 years. You can't project right now at 30 what you're going to be spending at 78 just on something.
Work hard and save. It's
work hard and save. Yeah. So if anybody wants to sell you a plan right now, you certainly don't need one. Now, totally different, Chris, if he was 30 and he wanted to retire at 35 or 40. Or if he was 50 and he wanted to retire at 55. Then yes, we're going to do a plan. But he's only 30. So I don't think he needs a plan. Don't waste your time. Don't try to figure out what, quote unquote, the number is. Save as much as you can. But if you're not saving at least 15 or 20%, you're probably not saving enough. That doesn't mean if you're saving 25, I'm going to let you cut it. Think of the seesaw. You're on one end. The older you is on the other end. If you cut your savings, that's going to help you. You're going to go higher. Just picture what's happening to the older you. He's going lower. It's a give and take.
Perfect. Okay. So that music means we're at the end of another episode of the Retirement and IRA Show, the podcast or iTunians edition, whatever you want to refer to it as. Those of you who listen on the podcast, this is going to post up here later this week, probably about the 20th of January. We really appreciate those of you who have listened live today. For those of you either listening to the recorded version of this later on or listened live next week, we should be live at the same time if you want to call into the show. We go live about 3:30 p.m. Mountain Time every Monday afternoon. So feel free to arrange your schedule so that you can call in with your live questions. If you don't feel comfortable calling in live, want to send us an email, jimhelps.com is the website, and that's jimhelps.com. Feel free to send us some a contact through there, and we'll get to your question as soon as we can.
Absolutely, and keep listening for the rebroadcast of the Colorado Show with the interview with Barry James of James Investment Research.
Perfect. So we'll see everybody next week.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's jimhelps.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Rocky Mountain High. Rocky Mountain High, Colorado.
Well, welcome everybody to the Colorado edition of the Retirement and IRA Show. I'm here in studio with Jim Saulnier, as usual. It's a pretty rare instance that he's not here. And me, too, I guess, for all, if that matters.
If you're not here, we're not recording because no one else knows how to do it.
I gotta juggle all these wires. And
you do have a larger amount than normal of electronic stuff in front of you today.
Well, it's mostly your new computer over there.
My new computer that we bought, yes. Mm-hmm. But a lot of wires everywhere. We were thinking recently, folks, Chris and I looked at our recording studio table and realized there's no real estate left on this table.
And this is a big table.
And this is a big, big table. And we have to clean this. I don't know where we're going to put everything, but it has accumulated.
I think a lot of it can go to recycling.
I think a lot of it can be thrown away. Absolutely. There is a lot of, heck, there's even Pete's stuff over there. He's taken up his little corner, and he's in Florida right now. So, anyways, I do want to welcome our Northern Colorado listeners. This is the Colorado edition of the Retirement and IRA Show. I also want to welcome our iTunians who will be listening to this later because we have a very special guest today. And as a result, we're going to tack this podcast onto our Retirement and IRA Show iTunes exclusive podcast because we think our iTunian listeners are going to find today's guest very interesting to listen to, especially with what he has to talk about today. today. As far as our Colorado listeners go, today's guest is not just a Colorado-specific show, so we're not going to be talking about things that apply just to Colorado. But today's guest is going to talk about investing, and that usually, Chris, captures people's ear of attention, so to speak. And I think so.
For a lot of people, that's kind of the exciting part of financial planning and advising, or finance in general.
Yeah, it's certainly not the correct claiming strategy for Social Security optimization. That doesn't grab people's, like, no, wow, I got to learn
that.
It's
not as romantic, and there's not as much of that in movies.
True, right? True. But today's guest is Barry James. He is a chartered financial analyst and CEO of James Investment Research and also president of the James Advantage Funds. Barry has been on today's show several times. He also appears regularly on CNBC, Market Watch, Fox Business, Bloomberg TV, and he's quoted on a regular basis as well in the Wall Street Journal and other financial publications. But his best accolade is appearing on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Well, I'm sure that's at the top of his
resume. That's top of his
resume,
list.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Sure.
He touts that on his resume till the cows come home. But we do get him on the show once a month, and he's going to come in and share his insights today on the recently passed tax bill and how it may impact the prices of the equity markets. And also something that he has been warning on, and something I tend to agree with him wholeheartedly, so you know he's right, if I'm agreeing. But is he agreeing with me? What if he's agreeing with me?
I don't know.
If
We'd have to rewind the tapes for a while and see who started
who came up with it first. That the markets are starting to show signs of exuberance, and I'm being a little facetious there. The markets are showing extreme signs of exuberance and a flashing warning signs, and Barry's going to talk a little bit about that today. So without further ado, as they say, Barry, are you there this morning?
I certainly am, and it's good to talk with you again.
Well, I want to begin by saying Happy New Year and Merry Christmas, belated to both, of course. But it is only the second week of June, so not June.
January.
January, second week of January. It would be nice if it was second week of June. That means I would be in Alaska fishing. But
yes, but we would have lost a half a year of our lives.
True.
Nothing to show for it.
We don't want to rush it that much, I guess. But second week of January, Barry, I do want to welcome you on to today's show.
Well, it's great to be with you, and we've got, I guess we got a few things to talk about because we've got a brand new year to try to figure out.
Yeah, so could you do me one favor before we begin? Tell me exactly where the equity markets will be almost one year from today.
It will be different than where it is today.
That's the best you can do? What will it be by the end of December of this year, specifically on December 31st?
I can predict that there will be volatility in the price of stocks, and that's about as far as I go.
That's about as far as you're going to go.
Because I do not know, and neither does anyone else.
Right. So if anybody out there claims differently, I would be a little careful. But
I will say, Barry, I know before we begin, because you had reached out to us to say, hey, I'd like to chat a little bit about the recent tax law changes. And we have 43 minutes on this show, so we got plenty of recording time.
Total.
Total. But before we jump into that, I do, and I tell our listeners all the time, if they don't receive your Monday morning market commentary, and it's not just yours, it comes out from your firm, James Investment Research, people should subscribe to it. I would. I would go to your website and definitely sign up for it. I know it comes from your investment management firm every Monday morning. It is written in such plain English, down to earth, easy to understand. You talk to folks, you don't talk above them. But today's that came out today, and it came into my inbox at 8:15 in the morning, was, I have to say, Barry, quite depressing.
We don't try to depress people. We just try to be realists. That's the honest way we try to go about it.
Well, let me say, you put that cork right back on that thing of wine or champagne. But I know the stock market has been popping cork bottles, champagne bottles, popping the corks off of cork bottles champagne bottles.
Wow, yes.
Since
I think they've got the visual.
Yes. Market for the first 2 weeks has been going crazy again. It's like nothing ended. It's like it's 1999 all over again. And then I read your email, and I'm like, well, damn, he just took the fizz off of everything.
Well, we don't intend to try to do that to folks. We believe that your emotions can really lead you astray when it comes to investing, and you're better off following the facts as much as you can. And so over 45 years, we've developed a process of trying to measure risk. Again, you asked me about the market. I have no idea where the market will be at the end of the year, but I can have a pretty good feel of what risk levels are. And again, that doesn't mean that, because there's high risk that the market has to fall tomorrow, because generally it doesn't do that. But it does give you a better feel for what direction you should be taking your investments. And, when it comes to investing, the most important thing you can do is preserve the capital that you've already got invested, and not try to chase that ever elusive, king investment that's out there, the glorious Bitcoin or whatever it happens to be.
Well, I do like how you put in, not only in the report we're going to talk about, the report your firm came out with called Topping Markets, but today's email pointed out something that I have noticed, Chris, anecdotally, just being out and about in the community, especially when I go to events and tell people, they say, oh, what do you do? I say, oh, I'm a financial planner. Then everyone reads into that I'm like Barry, an investment advisor. And they always start picking my brains on investments. And I have to tell them, no, we are financial planners. We're not investment managers. But right now I have seen anecdotally, Barry, an undue amount of enthusiasm for equities right now. And it's kind of harking back to me to what I was experiencing way back in the late 1990s, early 2000s, where people just didn't pay attention to risk. And I'm seeing the same thing here. I am seeing longtime clients of mine coming in for their reviews, and we're talking, and they're acting as if there's no risk. They're already acting with certainty that, okay, well, we're going to make another 10 or 15% this year, I can tell, one person said to me. And when I asked, well, how do you know that? How can you tell? He says, well, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't. Well, that's brilliant. Mm-hmm. Great analysis. Well, I don't know why they would go down, so they have to go up, ergo. And I just see anecdotally, but you bring out the facts, Barry. That's what I like better about working with your firm. You bring out the facts, and you point out in your Monday morning email to everyone today that you are finding 4.8 institutional investors are bullish for every one that is bearish, and 3.8 non-institutional, so regular Joe Schmo investors, are bullish for everyone that's bearish. For those who don't know, if you're listening, this bullish means you think the good times are going to keep rolling and everything is fine and stocks are going to keep going up. And bearish means you're a Debbie Downer. You don't think things are going to continue and you think stocks might be overvalued and due to fall. But that's some pretty significant differences between those who think equities are going up and those who think equities are going down. Seems to be that the euphoria is moving in one direction. Let's just party on.
It is, and when it comes to sentiment, it's probably the best measure of the direction, the future direction of the market. And you think about a boat. If everybody's on one side of the boat, and then everybody jumps to the other side of the boat, you could see it capsize. And that's where it is right now. Everybody's on one side of the boat, thinking that stocks are just going to go up, and eventually you get to a point where one person goes to sell, and nobody is there. They've already put all their money in. And if you look at institutional investors, for instance, they have very, very low liquidity levels. They're fully invested. And I've seen many reports where even those that are the most bearish, they're fully invested. So they don't have any more money to put into the market. And on the other side, on more on the retail side, you look at people who borrow money to buy stocks, it's at record levels today. So again, none of this means the market has to go down tomorrow or even this month, but it is one of the kind of warning signs that we see when it comes to the market.
Well, I will say, when everybody thinks something is a sure thing, It's probably not. It's too late. And right now, again, for the person I was talking to recently who felt equities were going to keep going up for no other reason except he can't see any reason why they would go down, ergo they must go up, when that's a sure thing. To me, that's a definition of a sure thing. And when everybody thinks it's a sure thing, when everybody and their uncle wants in on something, it's usually too late. Now's the time to get out, or at least start positioning your portfolio perhaps a little more defensively. And you write in your morning email today, as the last paragraph under the stock analysis section, you write, "Our leading indicators have deteriorated over the last several weeks, and we would recommend investors maintain below normal equity levels and focus on bargain securities." And that's key with your firm, Barry, and you personally, because we see eye to eye on that as well. We tend to be in the industry what is known as value investors, correct?
That is correct. And, you know, when what we say about that is have lower than normal. Don't be out of the market because, again, we can be wrong. And, you know, there's the old saying of stock market forecasters, often wrong but seldom in doubt. But anyways, but, you know, we've been at it for 45 years. We've seen this song many a time, know the tune quite well. And we would just say, why take extra risk after the market has run you know, where it is? And, you know, some of the things that we see risk in the market today is that the Federal Reserve has turned the corner from quantitative easing to quantitative tightening. So in other words, instead of just creating money out of thin air, they're getting rid of that money that they poured into the system, which we found over 90% correlation with the advance in market during that period they were doing it. Other things are valuation, not all valuations, but some valuations, such as the price you have to pay for a dollar of the company's sales is at record levels. We've already talked about optimism. We've not seen this much optimism except back in 1987. I know that's a long time ago, but I was in the business then, and there was a crash in the market. No recession, but the Federal Reserve was tightening, and people had gotten so excited about the market that, you know, it kind of had a tail off, as it were. And there's a certain mania going on today, especially in e-commerce stocks. We looked at five different bubbles, if you will, from, as you mentioned, the technology bubble in the late 90s to the Nikkei to, you know, real estate and oil and some others. And what we found is that the 5 years prior to them popping, those tend to go up about 500%. And we've just about seen that in the e-commerce area. So if that were to pop, then, you know, that would have an impact on those particular risky assets, but it would have an impact on the market. And a strange little thing, you know, we like to look at history, and we looked at four major tax cuts in the past, the Kennedy tax cuts, two Reagan, and the one G.W. Bush. And we found the year after they're signed, stocks don't tend to do a lot. But they did do a lot the year before they were signed into law because people were anticipating that good news. And so if you only see, the average is about 2% gain the year after it's signed, that may be, you know, that we're going to wind up having a pause in the market here before too long. But the good news to folks are the 4 years after that, you go back to very, very good returns in stocks, and the economy also seems to rebound as well.
When you looked at those prior tax cut events and the lead up to and then the after effects, something that was unique about this one, and maybe you can comment on it a little bit, the speed at which it was kind of proposed, negotiated, and then passed was a bit different than the past, wasn't it? In those more traditional political processes we saw decades ago, in that year you talked about the lead up as markets kind of priced in the benefits of a potential tax cut. These details kind of leaked out. You saw that being negotiated, but things were so quick this time. Do you think the markets have really priced in most of the effects of the tax cut, or are there still some revelations, if you will, that are going to come out as things become reality over the next few months?
Well, that's a great point, Chris. And, you know, it's like a Christmas present that, you know, it got signed just before Christmas, and we didn't really know what was in it. I mean, in one version, I paid more taxes, and another version, I paid less taxes. So I didn't know what was going to be the final outcome there until, you know, it finally got signed into law. And I think people are unpackaging it right now. So I think you're right about that, you know, especially with everything happening over the holiday season. People are trying to figure out. And you know, the couple things that we see with this, the reduction in taxes for businesses will definitely go to their bottom line. And, you know, some people say a 7% increase. Some people say a 10% increase in corporate earnings. Although I would say that a lot of this was factored in when the election was over, because, you know, the president ran on cutting taxes and cutting regulation. So I do think that people were hoping, you know, in that direction, even if it, you know, we didn't really know what it was until recently.
And I want to, I want to point out to our listeners that you have a cautious approach to the markets, not a negative approach. You're not telling people not to be invested. Your own firm still invests. I think it's important that our listeners understand that you're preaching caution, and so am I, to clients and prospects as they come in. A lot of people are touting, oh, goodness, I got a 20, 25, 22%, whatever it is, return last year. And I caution people, you haven't got anything until you actually lock those gains in. And I think that's what I try to get people to understand. There's nothing wrong with locking some gains in and waiting for a more valuable price or a more value-orientated price to buy back. Is that a safe, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you're not necessarily saying to avoid equities. You're just saying be cautious.
That's right. There's always something to invest in. That's the beautiful thing about investing and why I like it. I mean, I don't have to go hide in a hole just because I think things are maybe a little risky right now. And, you know, if I go back to 1999, you know, in the 3 years following, 2000, 2001, 2002, the market fell 35% or so, but there was a whole subsection of the market that advanced. And you and I like that particular subsection, kind of the value-oriented securities. They'd been completely ignored for a number of years, and they actually rose in price when the stock market appeared to be going down. So we're seeing that similar pattern today, where that value orientation and the things we call a bargain, which are prices of the stocks are trading at ratios lower than others, and they have good earnings, and they had been performing well. We call those bargain stocks. And they had been ignored. They'd been an upside-down market for quite some time, and we're just starting to see that turn. And the beautiful thing about that is once it turns, it tends to last for years. So there will be opportunities to maybe make some money, even though we might see a lot more volatility in the market than we've seen over the last few years, for sure.
Yeah, I've been telling people if they've come in and they want to invest now, oh, let's increase my risk tolerance from moderate to moderately aggressive, or let's put some more money in. I have some more money. Let's buy. And I ask people, do you like paying full retail for things? Do you like paying full retail? Or do you like to go to the store and look for the 30, 40, 50% off sales? And most people, no one has come in, Barry, and said, oh, I insist on paying full retail. It's phenomenal. I love it. Most people will say, no, I like to buy things on sale. Absolutely. I'll buy my summer clothes at the end of summer. I'll buy my winter clothes at the beginning of spring when everything is on sale. I like sales, or after Christmas sales, or whatever the case may be. And I'll say to them, if you like buying the products of companies on sale, why would you want to buy the companies themselves at full price? Why don't you wait?
That makes too much sense.
That makes too much sense. Well, because it plays against our fear and greed, the two biggest emotions in the equity markets today. And right now, I think the overriding theme I want our listeners to get out of today's meeting, because I know you personally, Barry. I've met you. I've chatted with you. I know what your investment philosophy is. You're not anti-equities right now. You're anti-overvalued equities. And when you are a conservative investor, a value investor, whatever euphemism you want to term, people like you and I, we just don't like paying full price, whereas a growth or momentum investor is what they're called. They love paying full price for something. They ascribe to the greater fool theory. I'm going to buy it at full price because I'm going to be able to sell it in a year or two to a bigger fool who pay even more than what I did. Because that's just what a momentum type investor does. We just don't agree with that, and we look at the actual price we're paying for something, not just the euphoria around something.
So we're about into another break. Maybe Barry, when we come back, you can talk to us a little bit about how generally not real high-level technical stuff, but if you could share with us how you identify maybe a value opportunity, what kind of characteristics are different than, say, the e-commerce stocks that you mentioned that were probably not considered a value investment at this time, just kind of generally, not about a specific company, but give you an idea. So people who are listening who may not know what they're even looking for if they go out looking for a value investment, what that might look like. So when we come back from this break, we're going to hear one of the top songs from 1935 as we look back to the beginnings of Social Security. Let me see if I've got a hint here. Actually, here's a little hint. This song appeared first in the musical film Gold Diggers of 1935. So, Jim, if you've seen that recently, maybe you'll recognize this song. Actually, I guarantee everyone listening will recognize this song.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
It's very recognizable. So we'll be back with you after this short break.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That, of course, is Lullaby of Broadway. Jim doesn't recognize
that. Is there
that?
Another version I would have noticed better than that one?
They've done a bunch of these. This is the one from the show, from the movie, so I played that one. But
that's from 1935, huh?
1935, yeah. Appeared in Gold Diggers of 1935. It was also, was typical back then, even in the same year, they would use a hit song in multiple movies, which, of course, that's kind of strange for this day and age. But later that same year, it was used as background music in the Bette Davis film Special Agent. So it was a two-for-one, 1935. This was in two movies. So we are back. We have been, if you've been with us for the first segment, we're have a special guest on, Barry James from James Investment Research. And he's been kind enough to join us as we try to get him on about once a month, have him share his insights about the markets and equities. And as we left it, we were going to maybe have Barry discuss just generally what kind of characteristics identify a value type investment rather than the alternative, which might be an overvalued investment, which we've already established last section or in our last segment.
That I like to say full retail.
Not a real attractive choice if you're trying to make positive investment returns. So, Barry, how would you describe or characterize a value investment?
That's a really good question, and in part it's patience, patience grasshopper patience. But when it comes to looking at equities, there's two things: what do you own, and when do you own it? And in the end, it's always when is more important, and it's actually when do you sell it. But going back to that, what do you want to own? And what we believe is a good, solid approach, and we've been using it for 45 years, and we've tested it many, many, many times, and it does work over long periods of time. When you talk about what to own, find something that is selling at a discount, just like Jim talks about. And how do you know it's at a discount? Well, there are ways to look at stocks, and you can compare them with another. The price you have to pay for a dollar's worth of earnings, say. One stock may be trading at 10 times its earnings, and the other may be at 20 times, so the 10 times is obviously cheaper. You can look at the price you pay for sales, the price relative to the cash flow of the company. You can look at the dividends of the company. These all kind of fall under that heading of value, if you will, the price versus what the book value of the company is. And then what we think is important, yes, you want it cheap, but you want a company to have earnings. And we look at historical earnings. A lot of growth folks are looking forward at projections of earnings in the future. The only problem is there's no real crystal balls out there. And your guess is as good as theirs as to the earnings outlook for a company. But historically, if you see nice, steady growth, why wouldn't you want to own a company, shares in a company that's cheap and has really good earnings? But when do you own it? And that's the final component that we look at. And actually, my father, kind of uncovered this in his doctoral dissertation back in the 1960s. I know that's a long time ago. But he found that stocks that are outperforming the market over long periods of time tend to continue. And if you follow football, Tom Brady, he's gonna do really well. If you follow baseball, some of the guys from the Rockies who have, batting over 300 year after year, they're gonna bat 300. So you want to find those that have been outperforming for long periods of time. You put those three things together, that's what we call a bargain. And we have found that those types of stocks, they don't go down as much when the market goes down. They do all right when the market's rising. But there are periods of time when they don't do as well, when they're not the darlings of Wall Street. And this is one of those times. And they're so rare that, it's like, they found that big, huge diamond, 910 carats in Lesotho over in Africa. Mm-hmm. And it's like finding one of those, but it's all covered in mud, and you can't tell what it is yet. But underneath that is a real diamond.
I want to focus on one thing that you mentioned there, which is the performance over a long period of time, because humans tend to have pretty short memories, and they can get caught up in much more short-term or recent performance. You can't be comfortable with a company that maybe has done well over the past 3 or 4 years. There's lots of companies that can do well over a short period. It's those, when you're talking long-term, and maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, but we're talking about companies that have had positive, strong earnings along with earnings growth over 10, 15, 20 years sometimes, where they've actually shown that over long periods of time, they have figured this thing out. Whatever business they're in, they've got it nailed, and they are selling something that people want to buy, earning revenues, and have figured out how to take those revenues and generate profits or earnings from those things, which ultimately, long-term, are the key drivers in the value of the stock and the company. It isn't just the past 2 or 3 years, right?
No. And, yeah. We don't buy into initial public offerings because mm-hmm. there's not any history there to look at. And the other thing is, about 70% of the time, a year later, those initial public offerings, the price will be below where it came out at. Facebook was even that way, even though it's obviously well above that now. But the first year is not a good time to own one of those.
Yeah, and if you look back historically about the big companies that have, and the well-known household names that have gone up over many decades, where they have gone up 8, 10, 12, 20 times, the stock has increased that much over that long period of time. A lot of people think, well, the only way I can make a lot of money on that is to be in early. That's not true. A lot of those big companies that have had earnings over long, the household names that we know, even if you got into them after they'd been around for 10 or 15, 20 years, you still, it wasn't too late for companies like that. Now, these companies that are a flash in the pan, that's a whole different story. They're going to shoot, you know, they're going to expend all their gunpowder over the 3 to 5 years, make a ton of money relatively, and then they're gone. So value investing is about that long-term steady, and you don't have to try to get in on day one. As you mentioned, you don't have to invest in initial public offerings or even close to that. You don't have to be in the first couple years. You can wait and see if the thing actually does work.
I agree with you entirely. We want a company that's going to be in business 10 years from now because that's the greatest probability that you're going to see the value of the company and its shares rise over time.
Perfect.
Okay, well, let's then delve into, I know you covered a little bit. I wanted to get to this topic because when you listed that this was one of the things that you might want to chat about, I thought, oh, this could be important. But where do you see, let's bring this back to the two main topics we told our listeners we were going to cover. And that was, is the market topping? And I think you made perfectly clear from a lot of measures, but one measure in particular that both you and I have noticed, me anecdotally and you based more on market history and sound facts, people are getting very euphoric. And when that is showing, that's usually a sign of a top. But it doesn't mean the market's going to go down tomorrow. It could continue to rise for another year or two. It could be in a horrendous shape this summer. Who knows? But we wanted to talk a little bit about a topping market and a little bit about the tax cuts. And you gave some history of after a tax cut, what usually happens. But let's take this out of the realm necessarily, Barry, of just equities, and give us your thoughts of what you think the new tax plan's impact on the overall economies may be, both short and long term.
Sure. Well, we went back and we tried to look at major tax changes in the past, the Kennedy, the Reagan, and the George W. Bush cuts. There's no perfect analysis. And, you know, just because one thing happens, you can't necessarily project that it's going to happen every time. But what I can say are, what are the facts? And after the last four cuts, we found the next 3 years, we saw growth in the economy at over 4% a year rate, which is about double what we've seen in the last 10 years. So that would be very, very welcome. And, you know, we try to drive down beyond that as to its impact on employment, and the unemployment rate fell in those cases. And we look at wages because, you know, that's obviously very important. Folks are concerned about working class wages. And we found that in the 3 years after, it definitely rose, and it rose about 5% a year during that period of time. And the one surprising thing to us was when you look at revenues to the government, you know, the federal income tax revenues, those 3 years following the tax cut, we actually saw revenues to the government rise by over 8% a year. 8% a year increase in revenues, even though the tax rate went down. And we all wonder how that can happen. But that first number I talked about, that big increase in the economy, that's like taking a pie and doubling it in size, if you will. And maybe you're still taking, you know, a little smaller, you know, percentage piece of that pie, but it's the pie is so much bigger that, hey, there's more money for the federal government. So, you know, I can't say it's a mystical miracle or whatever, but it has had very positive times after the previous tax cuts.
Well, it's interesting, the notion that less is more. You're going to collect less taxes and have more money. But we shall see if this holds true or not. I know if the economic growth happens, then perhaps collecting a lot of a little bit from people can be more than the way it was before.
A little of a lot?
Yeah. All right.
A lower percentage of a bigger piece.
True. That's right. If we can grow it, but collect less of it, you'll end up with more. But Chris made a very good point that does cause a lot of – it gave me pause because normally I am all for tax cuts. I just don't like the way this thing was ramrodded so fast, so in, yet it turns out to be 1,000 pages. Don't tell me they started writing this a week or two before the holiday season. This thing was being written long before. So what special interests were deep down in their writing? And who wrote it? Do you ever wonder who actually writes these things?
It was Bob.
It was Bob?
Bob, yeah.
All right. Is he the same one who wrote Obamacare? That was another 1,000 pages that nobody knew. Who wrote
Bob,
that?
Bob writes all these.
Bob writes it all. Yeah. All right. Do you know Bob, Barry?
I have not met him, no.
Nobody has, but it's just Bob.
But nobody ever asks who wrote this. But people sat around writing this. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a congressman. Half of them can't even spell their name right 5 times in a row. So they're certainly not out there writing this. So it leads me to believe a lot of special interests, a lot of
assistants and lobbyists participating.
Well, I was going to say something a little more harsher, but yes, a lot of assistants who want nothing more than to put the best interests of the country first probably wrote this. And that was the sarcastic Jim. Since Barry, let's get one more question out to you. See if we can roll this into now the topic of our show. You know, we like to talk about retirement planning and IRAs and things of that nature. So do you see any way or any manner that this tax plan may impact retirement planning or investing for your retirement? Do you see good trends, bad trends? Do you see any trend that we might be able to look for out of this tax plan as it relates to retirement?
Well, just on a general comment, there's not really much in the way of change in terms of retirement law in this, just one very minor thing in terms of IRAs that have gone from a traditional to a Roth. You can't go back again from the Roth to the traditional.
Right. We talked about that at length. And according to me, if you listen to my shows, that was not a minor change. That was a huge thorn in my side. But yes, we did talk about that, the inability to do Roth recharacterizations. But do you see anything else, any other general trends that you and your researchers are keying in on or sitting around saying, wow, this could cause this to happen?
Yes, we do. Obviously, it's going to be good for corporations and a certain section of the economy, that are sole proprietorships and S corporations and the like will also get some benefit. Now, it doesn't benefit folks like you and I who are in professional services. But, you know, I guess we don't deserve it or whatever. I don't know. But nonetheless, when it comes to the markets themselves, it's going to be pretty good for commercial real estate. There's some goodies in that plan that Bob worked out. So that's something. Now, maybe not as much for residential real estate, but on the commercial side and for renting and things of that nature. And so there are some aspects of investments you can put in your retirement plan that can take advantage of that. We also find that certain areas of the market, certain types of stocks will have the companies will have a greater benefit from this tax cut. And that's especially true of smaller companies. They tend to have a much higher effective tax rate than large companies, and so they will get a disproportionate advantage, and I think that will wind up playing through. And there's certain industries that would be true as well. Probably the energy area, we see that would be get benefits. The finance area will be benefited, both large and small, in that area, and even cyclical types of companies like even retailers and the like. They tend to have fairly high tax rates, and so they will get a boost from that. So there are certain sectors of the market in terms of size and certain sectors in terms of, you know, parts of the economy there that we see will be advantaged as a result of this. The one other thing I would say, though, when it comes to fixed income investing, people that have municipal bonds, they probably won't have much impact on them. They wound up not doing much to that, so that holds up well. But on the other hand, you look at companies that have a lot of debt, they put a lid on the top of those, the amount that they can write off. So people that have had high yield bonds, they call them junk bonds, where the companies have borrowed a lot of money and are paying a lot in interest, they've capped the amount of the of their profits that they can actually write off. So that might not be as good an area, and those companies might be facing a bit of trouble as the days go forward.
Okay, so outside of those, I don't think, and I agree with you, and Chris, you mentioned it as well, I don't think there's anything major in this tax bill that's a game changer as far as retirement planning goes.
I don't think there's anything it's directly targeted at benefiting or harming retirees specifically, but a lot of these effects, I would say, how long you have your time horizon, if you're close to retirement and you're going to need to rely on those savings that you've got maybe invested, that might play. We've got some different types of risks involved. Over the long haul, hopefully some of these things, the economy does grow, which hopefully then drives equities up even more for those who are savers. If you're not a saver, you're not going to participate in that. So I guess one is going to have to pay a lot closer attention to the when they're going to need the money that they have invested. And that probably plays more towards this, worries that we have with overvaluation of the markets more so than the tax code. I'd say the fact that the markets are up for such a long period of time without any significant relaxation or drawback that we've seen, that would worry me more for someone who's on the precipice of retiring than the tax bill changes themselves.
Well, you wrote about that, Barry, not only in your recent email, but in the Topping Market Research report you came out, the length of time without any significant correction, which has led people, I feel, falsely into the sense of security, where, again, that person earlier in the year said to me, stocks are going to go up because there's no reason why they should go down. Now, I'm paraphrasing, but that was essentially the argument. But do you have those facts handy about how long it's been since we've had a meaningful correction? And the longer we go, I don't get more excited and want to throw more money in. It'll be, again, it's not like when I'm, think back 8 years when gas kept rising from $2 to $3 to $4 to $5 a gallon. I didn't get more and more excited every time I drove by the gas pump, like, oh yes, it's up to $4.50. This time next week I'll be paying $5, I bet. This is great. We don't kind of look at it that way, but I often say stocks are the only commodity people insist and love paying full price for.
Yeah, well, just the numbers for what they're worth. It's been 13 months on the Standard & Poor's 500 since we've had a 5%, even a 5% drawdown, prices falling a little bit.
And you don't mean in one day. You just mean from a previous high to a new, not low, but from a high to a low, it has never dropped 5% yet in the past 13 months.
So, and on a global basis, it's over 20 months, which we've not seen since 1989. So these are, these are kind of new times, if you will.
Now, let me ask you something just off to the side.
Is this going to be a curveball?
It's not a curveball, but what are your thoughts of investors building a reserve, whether that reserve is cash or some type of holding that might yield a little bit more than cash, to take advantage of the next extreme that's going to happen? Because if right now we're in the greed extreme, we know there will be a fear extreme. And markets will correct. No one will see it, but then thousands of people will have said after it's happened, they saw it coming, but no one ever actually does. Do you have any problem with people building reserves or cash right now?
I have none at all, and we've actually done that with our accounts that we have the authority to adjust allocation. We've moved more into fixed income, high quality, very high quality. A lot of it is short term, because if the Fed's raising rates, then you can take advantage of those rising rates to get more. And a little bit on the longer term, because often what happens, even as the short interest rates go up, the Federal Reserve doesn't control the long ones, and they can dip. And especially that's true if the market does go through a correction. Those tend to be the safe place that people go to. So if you're talking about reserves, that would be one of those that you could go to, fixed income. And the other thing about it, nobody is talking about it. Nobody thinks it's a good idea, which generally means it's a really good idea.
Well, I had a recent retiree question me last week on why there was some cash in her account. And I had to explain to her the reason is I need assets to put to use when we find things of value. And when you don't want to sell something down 10% to buy something down 30. I'd like to sell something that is either treading water and not moving, or even earned a little bit in the major market melees. I often tell people it's an auction market, Barry. You know this. For every seller, there's got to be a buyer. Be yes. One of the buyers. Well, Barry, that's the music. Justin plays that. Not Justin. You are Chris.
My name's Chris today.
Yes, thank you. Okay. Chris plays that when he's trying to shut us up. So I think we're going to have to wrap things up. But I do appreciate you coming on the show, and I'd like to bring you back on in February if you'd like.
I'm looking forward to it. I had a great time chatting with you folks today, and certainly hope this was beneficial for all your listeners.
I'm sure it will be. Thank you very much, Barry.
Yep.
So do you want to sum it up once again who Barry was?
Sure. Barry James from James Investment Research is with us about once a month, shares his insights, those of his and his research team there at James Investment Research. Been around for a long time, and we really respect his opinion. So,
and if somebody wants his newsletter, I know we're running out of time, go to JIR, James Investment Research. Just Google James Investment Research. Go to their homepage and sign up for their Monday morning newsletter. You'll find it very interesting.
Perfect. So thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.